Kempire is brought to you by
Washington, D.C., the Kempire After Dark, the Villain Era live tour is coming to your city on August 22nd. But before that, we're coming to Philly on July 10th at City Winery. Then we're going to Atlanta on August 5th. Then we're going to Washington, D.C., and this is going to be an all-new show, all-new hot topics, all-new reality TV conversation, and all kinds of amazing guests and surprises. Be sure to get your tickets today, and don't forget, we're coming back to New York City on September 12th. Go get your tickets. There's also a live stream option exclusively for the New York City show. More information will be available in the description.
You're listening to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network.
Is this story that she tells regarding the email she got from her daughter in December of 2011. This is where Cassie Ventura writes her mother and another person explaining or expressing that Sean Puffy Combs, she said, threatened her, threatened to put out explicit videos of her. Again, this is around the holiday time, and also saying that he would do something to the person that she was dating at the time. In the email, it's Scott Mascuti, a.k.a. Kid Cudi. So this is when the mother is talking to the jurors, talking to the court, and saying that this was the first time the mom says she realized that her daughter had any issues with possible physical abuse. And in this case, her daughter saying that Sean Combs was going to put these explicit videos out. So her mother said that Sean Combs said that he wanted $20,000 because of money that he spent on Ventura. So the mother and her husband took out a $20,000 home equity loan, transferred that money into a checking account, and then sent it to Combs. What's so interesting about this story is that even though they sent that $20,000 and she said she was in fear of her daughter, she was concerned for her safety, that money came back to the Ventura family. They didn't get into detail about that other than to say that she, within 4 to 5 days, that money came back to their account.
And did they explain what would have happened or what they believed would have happened had they not wired Sean that money?
The prosecution, I believe, was trying to show that level of control that they talked about at the very beginning of this case. And then to see that her family talks about being intimidated and fearing for Cassie's safety, and that's why they sent the money, they said, because they were really concerned. Cassie Ventura saying she was forced into these situations and that she really didn't want to partake in them, even in her closing statement Friday saying, I would give the $20 million back if it meant I never had to take part in a freak-off. This is how she ended her testimony. So it is a big part of the case in reference to this notion that she was forced into it. And remember, the criminal enterprise and the racketeering, according to that indictment, is about him using force and threats and arson and all of these things, they said, for his sexual desires. A former personal assistant of Sean Combs from 2007 to 2009 wrapped up his testimony today. And part of what he described is seeing pills that Sean Combs had of the former President Barack Obama on them, that his face was on the pill, according to this former assistant. We have not heard former President Barack Obama's name brought up in any other context than just him saying that it was a pill with his face somehow, you know, on it. First time, I think the prosecution may have been trying to make an argument for the kidnapping, because in 2009, Cassie Ventura testified that she was in a fight with Combs, that he stomped her face, and it was so bad that she had to stay at the London Hotel in California for a little more than a week. This personal assistant talks about having to deliver Roscoe's chicken per Combs to Cassandra Ventura. But what he said was interesting is that when he went to the hotel room, it wasn't Cassie Ventura, it wasn't Cassandra Ventura that answered the door. It was an executive from Combs' team. So this is, again, this idea that Cassie said she could not leave the hotel. This is the first time I think I'm hearing someone sort of corroborate this story that could be related to the kidnapping, which is part of the bigger criminal enterprise racketeering charge that Combs is facing.
Do we know if Cassie has had her child yet?
According to Doug Wigdor, I saw her attorney this morning in the cafeteria and I asked her, we all want to know, did she have the child yet? Did she have the baby boy? And he said, we're getting close, but no, she is still pregnant. Now, things could change by the time 7:30 rolls around, but as of now, we're hearing that she is still very much expecting any day now.
When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS-certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp. all MadeSafe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style, and a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
It's day 7 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial, and Cassie Ventura's mother has taken the stand, yet Diddy's attorneys decide not to cross-examine her. Not only that, one of the male stripper is now speaking on the stand. We also have to give you some more context to some of the testimony from yesterday's day 6 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial. This is our channel's coverage of the Diddy trial, day 7. And as always, don't forget, you can hear our Diddy trial updates and exclusive content on the Kempire podcast. Just yesterday, we added additional content from Entertainment Tonight and Access Hollywood in regards to journalists that are inside the court giving their perspectives and legal perspectives on what is playing out. And everyone has their feelings, and every attorney has different feelings on how the defense is handling this case versus how the prosecution is handling this case. And I keep telling you, it's only the first week. It's too soon to make any determination on whether or not the prosecution has proved their charges. And I'm going to bring more experts here on the channel so that we can ask those questions and get a bigger perspective on what we're hearing and what we're watching. But as I mentioned before, it's important to make sure that you're listening to the podcast version, because a lot of times the podcast version I'm doing later in the day, and I'm seeing more information in regards to what is playing out in court. And as always, we cite our sources in the description for those that want to see more, hear more, etc. All right, so just backtracking to yesterday's testimony, I wanted to highlight one of the journalists that are sitting in the trial. That is Jerrica Duncan, who works for CBS News, but is being interviewed by our friends over at Entertainment Tonight. I played some of this yesterday in the podcast version of our Diddy trial update. I want to break down some of what she's saying in court, because some people came away after Dawn Richard's sidebar, for those that don't realize, I know it's spelled Richard, but I'm pronouncing it correctly. As someone that has spoken and interviewed Dawn Richard multiple times, that is the way you pronounce her last name. Okay? Thank you. Okay. Let me play this for you guys. As always, this is covered under fair use. We are breaking down, examining, researching this trial and some of what's playing out in court. And again, as always, we will be citing our sources in the description, because that's what we do over here. So let's take a listen to what Jerrica Duncan had to say in regards to what she observed during Dawn Richard's cross-examination.
What is your big takeaway from court today?
I think that the testimony that Dawn Richard gave and the defense really going in on some of the inconsistencies were the takeaway. So there were moments today where the defense was asking Dawn Richard, which, as you know, was a member of Danity Kane and another group that Combs had from 2004 to 2011. And what we heard today was Dawn Richard admitting that she was not sure why she didn't make some of her proclamations of who was at a party during an alleged assault. She said that she didn't know why she didn't say certain things in previous interviews with prosecutors.
Right. And some of those people that she failed to mention were A-list celebrities.
A-list celebrities, that's right. So there was an instance where Dawn Richard mentions an assault that happened at a restaurant. And she mentioned some of the names of people that Combs worked with. But when the defense asked her, well, what about the celebrities? You said there were celebrities there. Why didn't you mention those names? And she said she wasn't sure.
Wow.
But some of those names were Usher, Jimmy Iovine, she said, and Neo. She remembers being there.
You described today and the cross with the defense and Dawn as being ping pong. How so?
Yes. So I think that it was such a rapid fire of questions from the defense when she was asking Dawn Richard about some of those inconsistencies that you could literally see the jurors looking.
Sidebar, a lot of people, a lot of different, because I'm telling you guys, I know I'm giving you a summary from our friends over at NBC News during these last couple of recaps. However, I'm also paying attention to what Inner City Press is reporting inside the courtroom, what other journalists are reporting on. I'm giving you the full context of what I'm gathering throughout the day. I'm like full in. I'm not live the entire time, but I'm full in regards to what is playing out and the most poignant things that are coming out of some of the testimony. And one of the things that stood out to me in regards to this particular attorney that's a part of Diddy's defense team, who actually literally came up over the weekend, she was a part of the YSL trial that was happening in Atlanta with Young Thug. Based off of how the previous attorney handled the cross-examination last week, it seemed as if they were definitely wanted Westmoreland to come in and really go for Dawn Richard and really to take away from Dawn Richard's credibility. Why were there inconsistencies? You were interviewed multiple times, more than 10 times, I believe, by the SDNY. Why are there inconsistencies within your testimony? And she's saying, well, this happened a long time ago. And the more that I think about this, the more that I'm jogging my memory, the more that I've had to think about it, I'm remembering certain details. She also was called out for, why did you reach out to Sean Diddy Combs in 2020 and 2021 trying to work with him again if you were so fearful of him?
Back and forth at the defense and then at Dawn Richard. So that was the first time that I had seen that, as there was so much quick back and forth when the defense was making her arguments to Dawn Richard and questions really about some of those inconsistencies.
Wow. So Dawn finished her testimony today. She claims at one point that Diddy had hit Cassie with a skillet and said, quote, he said you could go missing, that we could die. So what was the reaction in court to that statement?
Yes. Yeah, so just to kind of set up the scene, the defense was saying, so did you say that Combs attempted to hit her with a skillet, or did he actually hit her with a skillet? She's pointing out that in several interviews, the story sort of changes, and Dawn Richard's response is, well, this was a long time ago, and sometimes my memory's a little foggy, and I might remember things differently. Mm-hmm. But again, as a juror, if you're listening to that, it goes...
It's also important to know, when you're seeing something that traumatic, you're not thinking years later, I'm going to have to recall any of this. I just want to put that out there. I'm not on either side of this whole situation. What I'm saying is that you're literally not expecting this. You're just starting this new project with Diddy. I'm not sure if she experienced any of these abuses while she was with Danny Kane, but this is the second time she's working with him in this capacity. And she says this is at the beginning of the recording process, and you're witnessing this physical abuse. The last thing that you're thinking is like, I need to remember whether or not he hit her with the skillet, or did he throw the skillet at her, or did the skillet make contact? I'm just saying, I'm pointing these things out. Just imagine if you were literally in a situation that you witnessed something, maybe it's out on the street, literally with the situation that happened here in New York City with the Mexican Navy ship that crashed into the Brooklyn Bridge. People that were witnesses there, if you recalled, what did you see? Did it hit the bridge? Did you see someone do something? Remembering those significant details years later, never mind days or hours later, just want to give some context.
Back to credibility, and you have someone that's facing serious time behind bars. So I think that's what they were trying to get at, that some of her stories weren't always exact to what she had previously told prosecutors. As it pertains to you could go missing, so the story goes, Dawn Richard said she witnessed abuse, and she said that Combs said, you will go missing. She took that as a death threat. So the defense then said, well, wait a minute, in 2020 and in 2021, you reached out to Combs to work with him again. So if you were so afraid of him, why then reach out? And that was a question that she had a really tough time answering.
First of all, I'm so impressed with how Jerrica is able to remember. She's not looking at notes, y'all. She's also a journalist. This is part of the job. But I love that she's able to remember a lot and give such clear answers. This is why I'm playing it for you guys. So I think this is interesting, but we have to keep in mind, too, yes, she witnessed these abuses while being in Diddy Dirty Money. But remember, this is years of working with him after those instances. First of all, now you have, for lack of a better word, been groomed, and this has been normalized to you. So am I surprised that she reached out to him in 2020 and 2021 to work with him again? Not really. Again, when we talk about cycles of abuse and how it affects others that are around you, she is also a victim and an employee. Don't let us get into the human resources of it all.
He did admit, though, that in fact, while I did feel threatened, and yes, he did say this to me, I did reach out to him during that 2020-2021 era about working together, about collaborating again.
What did Dawn claim in her testimony about seeing Diddy with guns and drugs?
So in the testimony, she talks about seeing him with a gun sort of like in his back, but she doesn't say he ever handled it. She never saw him cock the gun or do anything with it. But she does say that she witnessed Combs with a gun sort of in the.
And what does that feel like? Can you imagine? Let's put it in a picture that is all of us every day. Can you imagine showing up to your office that you're working one-on-one, a very casual office, and you see your boss, your manager, with a pow, pow, pow. And this is not one of those open carry states. You see your boss with a pow, 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 just walking around nonchalantly. Just saying, you don't have to use it or point it at someone in order for it to be threatening.
Back of his clothing. When it comes to the drugs, she said that there was a drug dealer named One Stop who would come and deliver not just cocaine or Molly or ecstasy, but she said that he also had Plan B and birth control. Again, this is the drug dealer that she said his name was One Stop.
Cassie's ex-best friend, Carrie Morgan, also took the stand. Tell us about her testimony and claims that she herself was also assaulted by Diddy.
That's right. So Carrie Morgan, a woman from Buffalo, New York, who's pursuing a modeling career, meets Cassie when they were in their late teens. She said that she was her best friend from about 2001 to 2018. And the reason that they stopped talking is because she was assaulted by Combs. Her former best friend acknowledged that because of that assault, she did receive a settlement and signed an NDA, but received $30,000. So what I thought was interesting, Rachel, for as much as we have already heard from Cassie Ventura about the number of times that she says she was beaten up and assaulted by Sean Combs, her best friend, again, who was around at that time when she was dating Combs, said that she only saw two times in which Combs was physical with Ventura, once in Los Angeles and another time in Jamaica.
Is this the best friend that Cassie told Diddy that he probably would be a better fit?
Correct, because this is around the same time that they met. Very good. Last week, during the testimony, there was an email that was shown where Cassie sort of attributes maybe Combs wants to get with her friend Carrie. So Carrie Morgan, again, they're not friends anymore. They don't speak, but this is the woman who's testifying today. So at the beginning, before the jurors came in, the judge talked about being careful not to make this sort of a gossip case, if you will, or case.
The judge, Judge Aaron Subramanian, is not playing. He's not trying to make this a spectacle. It's already a spectacle outside the courtroom. He's not trying to make this courtroom a spectacle. I thought this was such an important point, and this is the part that I highlighted in the podcast version last night.
Built on gossip were his words. So what we're seeing is the judge actually acknowledging that there's concerns from the defense about some of the statements that are being able to be read in court or some of the evidence that's being able to be submitted. So there's this acknowledgement that, you know, focus on the racketeering, focus on the elements of the crime, not so much on things that are hearsay or gossip-like. Thought that was interesting.
And these jurors are not sequestered by any means,
no,
right? So,
no.
I mean, you're not supposed to
correct
tune into news, read about it. I'm assuming now social media is added to that list.
Which is so interesting to me. They're going to have to be very diligent and self-reliant on making sure that they do not. And are they all going to do that? Sidebar, in today's trial, four jurors were late. But if you're a New Yorker, they were believing that the reason why the jurors were late was because of the subway. It was the subway. I'm just going to say it. It was the subway. Yes, we have a very complicated system here, but this system is always delayed. So I'm pretty sure those four jurors were late because of the subway, or maybe they're just tired.
Of things, but it's in 2025, how really is that possible?
And I have to say, this is probably the first trial where I've seen so much social media presence, TikTok, Instagram, bloggers, people out here. So even though you're not supposed to look at your phone and you're not supposed to read messages from family and friends about this case, there's a lot of information out there.
Right.
So hopefully they're doing their due diligence and making sure that they are being good jurors,
yes.
But I imagine it would be tough.
They end up talking about why, whether or not the family was not present in court yesterday. We talked a little bit about that as well. As we know, the twins were getting ready and they had their prom over the weekend. Their brothers were also there for that. I'm not sure if Chance was there, but they talk about that in this. I'm not going to play that for you. I do want to get into what Access Hollywood had to say, because I think the important thing to note here when it comes to the Diddy trial is the fact that he's not being charged for domestic violence. He's being charged for S trafficking, racketeering. And a lot of people are saying, I don't see RICO here. I don't see RICO. A lot of people that are saying that aren't necessarily in the court. But here's the thing. And some people are reaching out to me. Shout out to all the attorneys that have been reaching out to me. Some of you are former prosecutors or current prosecutors are saying, just wait. They are building their case. They're building their case. It's a slow burn. We have how many more weeks? Six and a half more weeks of this trial. And we already had the star witness, Cassie Ventura, testify. Her mother testified today. And sidebar, her mother testifies and the defense says, we don't have any questions for her. Especially when she testifies that she had to get out a loan from her home in order to pay Diddy, because he demanded $20,000 from them for the amount of money he spent on Cassie. One of the other things that I'm going to talk about, and I'm sure it will come out here, is the fact that the prosecution has released photos, and I talked about this in the podcast last night, photos of the S workers that Diddy and Cassie enlisted for their freak-offs. They also released photos of the things that they discovered when Diddy was arrested. Remember, we talked about this when it was just speculation at the time, and we said drugs and money and different items for freak-offs were found in his hotel room. But here's the bigger thing. I don't care about Diddy's sescapades or his fetishes or whatever it may be. I don't care about any of that. I do care if it's harming other people and people are being coerced. That's the important part of what the prosecution also has to prove. But what is standing out to me in regards to the drug use and some of that drug use made him the violent man that he was. I'm wondering, and I'm not wondering, I'm pretty sure that DV stuff did not end. But again, it didn't involve Cassie. Who did it involve? Apparently, a lot of the potential witnesses are still under seal, and they're only unsealing them as we get closer to them testifying. And today, Cassie Ventura's mother testified, Diddy's former assistant who testified yesterday also testified today, and the Punisher, a stripper that was also involved in one of these freak-offs or involved with Cassie and Diddy, also is testifying today. Let's take a listen to what Access Hollywood's perspective, their own attorney, their perspective on what happened yesterday in day six of the Diddy trial.
Don Richard's testimony, the purpose was to corroborate Cassie's story. So Don Richard told a very disturbing story about how she saw Diddy hit Cassie with a skillet while she was cooking eggs. Now, this was a huge part of her testimony. She said that he attacked her with a skillet and that Cassie went down on the ground in a fetal position, basically saying she knew what was going to happen when he came at her in that room. Don Richard went on to say that after this happened, Diddy brought her and another woman into his recording studio the following day, and he told them that this was not something they should.
The other woman is Kalena Harper. That was also part of Diddy Dirty Money.
Talk about, and in fact, threaten them by saying, where I come from, people that talk disappear. So Don Richard testified that she perceived this as a threat to keep her mouth shut. And prosecutors were looking to use that not only to corroborate Cassie's testimony, but to talk about Diddy and his pattern of silencing victims. And
this is an important part to know. This is why I'm playing this for you guys again in day seven, because I think people are getting confused with what is the angle here. Are they proving their case? Buckle up.
Those around him and using his power to keep people quiet while doing his bidding. Now, prosecutors got that out.
Not just people, his employees. That's the enterprise portion of this.
Into the testimony about this violent act. attacked Diddy against Cassie. But the defense really went hard at Rashard during cross-examination. They were able to point out the inconsistency of her story over time. They asked a lot of questions about, did you hear the skillet fall? Did you hear something hit the wall? What actually happened that day? And pointed out that in prior interviews, the story had evolved and changed. The most important part of Rashard's testimony for the prosecution is the threat that was made after by Diddy to Rashard, basically saying, keep your mouth shut or something bad is going to happen. Well, the defense was really able to pick that apart on cross-examination. They pointed out that had never come up in 7 interviews with the government prior to trial. And in fact,
that's important to note because it's chipping away at Dawn Rashard's credibility.
Art was just added to her story this week. So the defense was really able to undermine her credibility, point out how the story had changed significantly over time, and how that one detail, the most important to the prosecution, that threat, was something that she had not reported in the past. So all in all, the defense did a great job of attacking her credibility on the stand. On cross-examination, the defense has a couple of goals, and one is to impeach credibility. And so they point out other motivations for the testimony. Why would the testimony change at the time of trial from what somebody said years and years before? Or didn't bring up years before? Well, in this case, for Dawn Rashard, the defense says it was financial gain. She's bringing a civil lawsuit seeking compensation. So that's her motivation for testifying the way that she did on the stand. Kerry Morgan took the stand and talked about her relationship with Cassie Ventura. And it started off with Kerry explaining how they met, that they became best friends. They moved in together in Manhattan in 2004, talked about all of the things that they did together. And one of those things was go out. She said they went out, they went to dinners, they went to clubs. And it was a focus of the prosecution on direct examination to ask, did you both drink together? And so maybe this seemed a bit innocuous, but to me, I picked up the narrative prosecutors are laying down, which is prior to meeting Diddy, Cassie didn't really do any drugs. She didn't even really drink. This is what Kerry testified to. She said that anytime they would go out and have drinks, that Cassie would end up being sick. They didn't really drink that much together.
And then when you think about what you heard in Cassie Ventura's testimony, where she talked about all of the drugs that she ended up doing and drinking that she did, she claims that the reason why she even did some of those things was to numb herself because of the intensity and the frequency of the freak-offs that she claims that Diddy forced her into doing.
This was something that I expect to see being extrapolated on by the prosecution to kind of say that Diddy really did influence her to take drugs and ultimately become an addict. So there was the foundation there. She also testified that she and Cassie are no longer friends. And the reason? Because she didn't want to be involved in their problems anymore. She said they had a volatile relationship. She also said that she didn't even want to be here to testify today, that she was called via a subpoena, and so she had to be, but she did not want to be here on her own, and she left that part of her life and all of their problems behind her.
It also makes me wonder exactly Kerry saw, or that was just enough for Kerry. Because remember, Kerry Morgan, who was best friends with Cassie for 17 years, and again, she only said that she witnessed 2 incidents, doesn't mean that all of what Cassie documented in regards to the abuses that she experienced with Sean Diddy Combs didn't happen, but she said she only witnessed 2 different events. The Jamaica one, I'm like, I don't know what that was. That just was, ugh. When you recount some of what happened in that Jamaica incident. But that was enough for Kerry to be like, I want no involvement in this. And part of why she disconnected from Cassie was because, very much like any person that's in an abusive relationship, they're choosing their abuser over their family and friends. And now they've been alienated. Now she no longer has that best friend anymore. And to this day, it's affected their friendship. They have not spoken since, I'm guessing the day that she, no, not I'm guessing, I reported this yesterday, since the day that Kerry signed an NDA and received $30,000. She didn't see Diddy after he physically assaulted her. she only saw Cassie.
Kerry Morgan also testified about a very specific instance of Diddy attacking Cassie. Can you tell me about that?
Kerry Morgan testified about two very specific and very violent acts by Diddy against Cassie. One was at his Hollywood Hills home, where Cassie was forced to flee. And in fact, they heard Diddy driving around trying to find them. Eventually, Cassie went home and it seemed to blow over. Another instance was a trip to Jamaica. She heard Cassie scream in a way that she described as guttural and terrifying. She saw Combs dragging Cassie by her hair, and the fight continued into the driveway, where she saw Combs push Cassie down, resulting in Cassie hitting her head on a brick. The elements of sex trafficking is engaging in commercial sex through force, fraud, or coercion. So the key words here, and what the jury is going to need to decide, is was Cassie coerced into engaging in the freak-offs, or was she there on her own volition? What we heard today, both from Dawn Richard and from Kerry Morgan, is that violence was not something Cassie was a stranger to at the hands of Diddy. What you're going to hear on summation is prosecutors closing that loop and tying the violence that Cassie experienced to her engaging in the freak-offs, meaning she engaged in them because the alternative was for her to be beaten. And what we're hearing from these witnesses today is corroboration that this was a very violent relationship and that Cassie really didn't have a choice in the matter when it came to Sean Combs. And that's how prosecutors are going to close the loop. And they're going to use all these corroborating witnesses to show that Cassie was really under his thumb because of fear of violence. Cassie Ventura's testimony was really important for the prosecution, and she's actually the star witness, but she laid the foundation for what's to come. She identified individuals who are potentially going to be co-conspirators in the criminal enterprise. She explained who the cast of characters are, and she also talked about other things that are going to matter in this case.
It also makes me wonder when she points out the possible co-conspirators. Again, the witnesses that the prosecution have are under seal. So we, the public, do not know who's necessarily coming up until maybe like the day before. And it makes me wonder who else is going to testify. Because KK, Christina Curram, his longtime chief of staff, she's seen a lot. And again, when you receive a subpoena from prosecution, you have to show up. So I have a feeling I would be shocked if we go through 8 weeks of testimony and we do not hear from KK.
When it comes to the charges, drugs, guns, kidnapping, arson, you name it, it came up during her testimony. But the witnesses that are to come this week are really critical to the prosecution's case when it comes to establishing the RICO conspiracy charge. That's crimes that are committed in furtherance of a criminal enterprise. Here you have a criminal enterprise of one, Diddy. So his co-conspirators, who presumably have deals with the government, are set to testify. Two of them are on the witness list this week. One is his former personal chef, and another is his former personal assistant. Listen for that testimony to really close the loop on the means and manner of the criminal enterprise, meaning explaining what it is and how it functions. This is really important for the prosecution to establish that element of the crime. Also, Cassie Ventura's mother is set to take the stand. She's on the witness list. That is going to be very emotional testimony. She's a corroboration witness, meaning we're going to learn what she knew and when about Cassie's relationship with Diddy.
And that's what we hear today. And we're going to go through Cassie Ventura's mother, Regina's testimony. I remind you, when she testifies, the defense, Diddy's defense team, said they have no questions for her. Which I know some people will be like, it's not a good thing. However, again, we are 6.5 weeks out, probably more than that, in regards to what's playing out in this case. But this is an important witness to the abuse. But you see what she's laying out here in regards to the RICO of it all.
Many of the witnesses in this trial are still under seal. We're only learning week to week who's going to testify. Is it possible some of those big celebrity names may be called into the courtroom? It's possible, but it's unlikely. We already saw a whole host of individuals on the People and Places list. These are people who may come up during the course of evidence or testimony, but aren't necessarily going to be called as witnesses. Witnesses here are not going to be people who saw them fight in a public place. The witnesses are going to be those who can speak to the intent, speak to the actual charges, like the criminal conspiracy or the sex trafficking charges, not just what they observed on a night in a restaurant.
I appreciated that, and I felt like that would be very important for us as a community that's examining this as laymen to hear some experts and journalists and lawyers that are examining this. And as you probably are probably watching some of these attorneys that are covering this case, they all have very different opinions, which I'm open to hearing the differing opinion, the contrasting, conflicting opinions, because it might shift our opinion. But again, we have to remember the determination of Diddy's freedom is what the jurors determine based on the information and the guidelines the court has given them. That's who has to be convinced. Not you, not me, not anyone else. It's that jury. So let's get into today's events of day 7 of the Diddy trial. But before we do that, as always, I'm going to remind you, for those that are watching this on YouTube, be sure to like the video, be sure to subscribe, be sure to turn on your notifications. I know a lot of people have been saying that the notifications for YouTube have not been working. Try turning them off, turning them back on. Also follow me on X, Blue Sky, or Threads. I am reposting these videos, and when we have our live chat at those times. So be sure to follow us there. And a reminder, the Kempire After Dark, the Villain Era live tour tickets are now available for Philadelphia for July 10th, Atlanta for August 5th. I have another August date. I can't announce it just yet. That's coming up, so stay tuned for that. And New York City this fall, September 12th at the Green Room 42. Get your tickets today. There's a live stream option for that show. I will be, again, Philadelphia City Winery, Atlanta City Winery, the Green Room 42 here in New York City, and another date, another venue. So stay tuned for that. More information on all of that will be available in the description, along with everything Kempire, including the Kempire podcast. As I said before, as I'm gathering things throughout the day, I will add them to the podcast version. So what you're getting here probably won't be the same exact version on the podcast. And while you're on the Kempire podcast, it's very important for you guys to rate the podcast. So if you haven't already, be sure to give the podcast a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. It's a great way. I know some of you would love to throw dollars at me, but this is one of the free ways that you can support this channel, liking this video, subscribing to this channel, but also if you're listening to this on the podcast, to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And as always, telling a friend to tell a friend. I know with this Diddy trial, there are a lot of new people that are being a part of our channel. As a reminder, we allow people to have their opinions. We do not attack each other for having anyone's opinion. As long as you're sharing your opinion.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple $1,000s in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/FMH or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/FMH.
In a peaceful and constructive way here on the channel. We do not moderate adults, all right? And shout out to our King's Guards that hold us down and moderate in the live chat and in the comment section, okay? Also a reminder, you probably are seeing some spam comments of people saying like, I've been following your channel for a very long time and da-da-da, this is some amazing content. Please do not engage with them because they're spam. I don't know what they will do if you do engage with them. Just ignore them, leave your comment again. Let's get into day 7. And shout out to our friends again over at NBC News that are providing some of what's happening in the court. As I said to you before, I'm also relying on other journalists that are inside the court, like Inner City Press. I've been following them throughout the day, throughout the days of this coverage, and they've been providing a lot of really great information. You could also check out their X page for additional content that they're providing, and also another way for you guys to support them. Okay, so our friends over at NBC update us on today and what we can expect for today. They say jurors will get a more insider's look at the luxurious and often tumultuous lifestyles Combs led with Cassie Ventura. After James's testimony, the government is expected to call 3 witnesses today. Sheree Hayes, that's the Punisher, a stripper. Sidebar, I did want to mention this just in case I forget to mention this, because along with all of the freak off materials and pictures that the feds captured when they arrested Diddy, they also have shared all the photos of the male S workers that Cassie and Diddy would enlist for their freak offs. As I've said before, a lot of you have asked me, do you think any celebrities will be testifying or celebrities will be exposed in regards to some of these freak offs? I don't believe that they will. It seems as if the court and the feds are intentionally protecting some of these people. Yes, people are being mentioned, but not in a derogatory or possibly defamatory way. However, I find it interesting that they expose these S workers. At least 2 of them I know are currently in jail, like Jonathan Oddi. Ash is one. Ash is currently in jail for offing a friend or something like that. But here's my thing with this. Yes, whatever they're doing goes against our laws, and we could get into a whole conversation about sex work and things. We're not going to do that. But I just find it interesting because here's the thing. I don't know the intention in sharing these individuals' photos. And I just feel like you've put them, first of all, you put them in danger. Some sex workers end up having other jobs and other lives after this. And I don't know what their lives are. I don't know if they're currently S workers. However, I just felt like, okay, you're more than willing to expose these people because maybe because they're not celebrities, but you're going to protect the celebrities and not share their information. I'm okay if you do not share both. I did not expect that, especially because I don't believe all of these S workers are going to be testifying. Why? And again, we're not even in the court. Why are we sharing their photos? Why are we doing that? Because here's the thing. If this is their livelihood, this has probably just ended their livelihood. Or if they've moved on and they're doing other things, maybe they got a corporate job somewhere or doing something different. And now you've exposed that. And now you jeopardize their potential current job. I just felt like that was so irresponsible. It felt icky seeing it. And we won't be sharing it here. I'm sure by now you've probably seen it all over social media. It's one thing to share the details of what's happening in this case, but there are actual innocent people that you're now exposing, but you won't do it for the celebrities. Why? Because they're celebrities or because they're public figures that actually probably not only committed a crime in these situations, but okay. It just feels icky. My feeling is just keep it all under seal and just allow if the people that are testifying, fine, but also just allow the jurors to see whatever this is. But again, I don't know why the jurors would need to see the images unless you're just confirming this is the person that's in the video. But anyway, that I just wanted to share that. I talked a little bit about that on the podcast version last night. They say that Sheree Hayes, who is the Punisher and also was a part of the Freak Offs, will testify today. Regina Ventura, Cassie Ventura's mother, and Jordan Atkinson, who was a chef for Diddy. And Diddy got into a physical altercation with Jordan. And I believe Jordan was in the Max documentary. I've seen a couple of the documentaries, so if I mix them up, I apologize in advance. But I believe it was the Max documentary that Jordan was in. So they said Hayes is an exotic dancer known as the Punisher, while Regina Ventura's Cassie's mother. Atkinson once worked as a personal chef for Combs. They said last week, Cassie Ventura described how Combs directed her to hire male S workers to take part in freak-offs, often long and drug-fueled orgies choreographed by the defendant who watched in the same room. And based off of what I saw in the courtroom reporting that they were doing, they talk about, at least, they don't go in details about the freak-offs, but the Punisher does talk about his first first interactions with Cassie and Diddy. And he said that he immediately recognized who Diddy was and who Cassie was because he follows Diddy on Instagram, or followed. I don't know if he still does. All right. So they said the seventh day of testimony in Sean Combs' trial should start with continued questioning for his former personal assistant, David James. James gave compelling testimony yesterday, vividly recalling details of his two-year stint at Combs' side, where he said that they ended up working like 20 hours a day. Crazy. I mean, even if Diddy gets off, I just feel like there are so many lawsuits that are coming his way, both civilly and even criminally. Because I don't know if the statute of limitations are expired when it comes to some of the abuses. They said that James gave compelling testimony yesterday. They said the witness was emotional at times, shedding tears as he described some of the better days and more rocky times Combs and Cassie Ventura enjoyed. They said that three witnesses testified yesterday on how Combs appeared to control Cassie Ventura. The witnesses were Dawn Richard, a singer in Combs' former girl group, Danny Duquesne, Ventura's former best friend, Kerry Morgan, and David James, a personal assistant who worked for Combs from 2007 to 2009. Richard recalled how Combs would allegedly punch and choke Ventura. Morgan testified that she witnessed Diddy assault Ventura twice, once in Jamaica and once in Los Angeles. Morgan also testified that Combs assaulted her in Ventura's home, leading to a falling out between Morgan and Ventura. James testified that Ventura told him that Combs controlled her career and money. And I don't know about you guys, I'm seeing so much old footage of Cassie and Diddy in interviews, and I'm just like, oh, there was an interview that DJ Envy did with Diddy, and Cassie was there, and Cassie was talking about her new music, and they were talking about, yeah, her new music is going to come out at the end of the year, maybe top of the next year. And you look at Cassie's face, and it's quite telling, like, there's something going on there. All right. So they said that Combs arrived in court this morning wearing a sweater over a white shirt. Important to note because, again, in this federal trial, we do not have any cameras or audio from this case, which I'm kind of glad about, guys, because you already see how it's a circus outside this courtroom. Can you imagine if cameras and audio were allowed? Just saying. David James, Combs' former personal assistant, who will testify today, was seen arriving at court shortly after 8 a.m. Other arrivals include this morning attorneys for Combs. They name all the attorneys. And one of his attorneys, Xavier Donaldson, is fine. Sorry. I saw a photo. Court is officially in session, kicking off a day 7 of the Combs trial. This is David James returned to the witness stand for his second day of testimony. He appeared to be wearing the same blue suit and white shirt as yesterday. Okay, not everybody has multiple suits, NBC. Ugh. David James said that he didn't witness any physical violence between Combs and his former girlfriend, but testified that he did see a blog post alleging that Combs hit Cassie at a club. Combs allegedly searched James's computer history and became upset, telling James that someone was lying. The former assistant called it, quote, jarring, because Combs had never searched his computer history before. James looked for the post, he said, because Cassie had been staying at the London Hotel for a week and he was tasked with bringing her food. But Combs' personal staff was the one answering the door. He says, I was surprised. I was expecting to see Cassie, James said. She usually answered the door. There were rumors that oftentimes after he would harm her, that he would send her away and she'd be in hiding. So they said Cassie testified last week that Combs put her up in the London Hotel after allegedly attacking her in the back of a car while leaving an event. She told the court that she didn't feel as if she could leave and that Combs' security was present. So James told jurors that Combs didn't travel light and had a long laundry list of items to be packed in his overnight bags. The music mogul's Louis Vuitton regularly carried $10,000 in cash and sometimes much more, James said. Is that legal to be carrying around that much cash? Combs' medicine bag included 25 to 30 undisclosed pill bottles, along with Advil, Tylenol, Viagra, pills to increase sperm count, and water pills, James said. He later added that Percocet and Ecstasy were in the medicine bag and that he witnessed Combs taking them. How do we know? I mean, okay, maybe I'm a little too green, okay? Because I'm like, how do y'all know which one is which? But okay, look, I'm not pretending. Some people pretend not to. I am trying to understand. How do we know? Unless it says it on the bottle. Sidebar, Frank Black,
That was Diddy's alias. So in the photo of the things that were confiscated during his arrest, you see, and Cassie mentioned this, that his alias for when getting hotels and things like that was Frank Black. And literally, that's the name you see on the medicine bottle. All right. Just wanted to point that out to you guys. But he later added that the Percocet and Ecstasy were in the medicine bag and that he witnessed Combs taking them. The witness also said that he was instructed to buy baby oil. Now I understand where one of the personal assistants says he was just so triggered by baby oil, the amount of baby oil and things that were, like, I don't know what his obsession with baby oil was, but, like, even now, I'm like, oh, I use coconut oil, and I'm like, oh, God, just thinking of dipping. I'm sorry, y'all. I just, to make light of a very terrible situation. So that the witness also said that he was instructed to buy baby oil, Astroglide, and condoms for trips in cash so that Combs could reimburse him personally off the company books. So he was already conscious that he didn't want to intermingle some of the things that he was doing. But I think over time, he just got sloppy. So David James testified that he walked into a hotel room to deliver items for Combs when he saw Cassie in a hotel bed with a man he did not know in the room. The former assistant said that he was in Miami in 2008 when Combs requested James bring his iPad to the couple's hotel room. When no one answered, James testified that he used his key to let himself in. James said that he saw Cassie apparently sleeping with a comforter pulled up to her neck while Combs was in the shower. He testified that he saw a man with long hair walk across the room. "I never spoke to them about it. I just thought that they were doing personal things," James said. "I never had conversations with Cassie or Mr. Combs about their personal affairs." And that's what they like about assistants. Combs brought in a lie detector and conducted it on James at least twice while James worked as his assistant. What? James told the court that in the first year working for Combs, some money went missing and Combs had a former FBI agent who specialized in polygraphs to interview him. This is important to note. He had a former FBI agent friend that specialized in polygraphs to interview him. Who else did he know? "It was very intimidating," James said. "I had never taken a lie detector test before." He added that the second time that he took a lie detector test was after a watch went missing. James also testified that Combs' security searched his clothes and drawers when a Cartier bracelet went missing. For all we know, one of the freak-off individuals could have taken it. He could have dropped it somewhere because he's so high off of all the different things that he's taking. Who knows? And paranoid? Who knows? So James, the former personal assistant, recalled how he once got high on ecstasy at a New Year's Eve party and Combs allegedly kept a video of James dancing at the party. "Okay, I will keep it if I need it," James said, quoting his then boss. "He thought that it would be embarrassing for me." Oh. The minor detail could help prosecutors build their greater narrative that Combs allegedly used his business to control people in his sphere. But just a video of him dancing? I don't think that would be, unless there was more. So, Suge Knight is mentioned a few times in this trial. So all those rumors and conspiracy theories about his involvement with Biggie and Tupac. James said that he was, quote, shook after seeing the desire by Combs' team to grab GUNs and confront Suge Knight at a Los Angeles diner in 2008. The witness recalled an incident when the team was out getting a late night snack at Mel's Drive-In when Combs' confidant D-Rock spotted that the Death Row Records chief there and said, "This mother effing Suge Knight." Oh, that's mother effing Suge Knight. James said that Combs' team met up with the music mogul back at his house and he armed himself with 3 hand GUNs to go and possibly confront Knight. The incident, James testified, is what prompted him to quit. "I was really shook up by it," James said. "This was the first time as his assistant that I realized my life was in danger. I told him that I want to leave, but give 6 months notice so that I can train the next assistant." This is a situation, I tell you. So Diddy's defense attorney, Mark Agnifilo, took over David James's cross-examination. He started by asking James why he didn't provide more details on the Suge Knight incident. Sidebar, from what I recall, they say that David James has
some sort of immunity. So he struck some sort of deal. I'm guessing he wanted that in advance, depending on some of the things that he might share during his testimony that could incriminate him, which is smart. But based off of what we hear from his cross-examination and my research of this, they're saying that he didn't really need it. But you never know. God only knows the things that he saw and witnessed. He probably thought, does this implicate me? Diddy's defense attorney, Mark Agnifilo, takes over the cross-examination. James responded to the story, stopped because he was instructed, quote, not to say anything that would incriminate himself. Agnifilo asked about a prior statement in which James said that he was inside the diner, but James said that he didn't remember it. This is, again, 2008? A long time ago, I'm telling you. I don't remember last week. Okay. If you had to force me to recall something, you know what I mean? In a trial filled with lurid and disturbing details of S.A., the promise of mundane questions was welcomed in the courtroom. In its cross-examination of James, defense attorney Mark Agnifilo told the witness that he had, quote, a few more mundane questions. James, there was some quick, like, cute banter between David James and the defense. He says, I like mundane questions, drawing laughter from the gallery. James recalled how much he admired Combs and his desire to work for him. A lot of people did back then. I wore Combs' clothing line, Sean John, early on, James recalled. I was studying abroad in London in 2004. People would come up to me and say, where did you get Sean John from? And I understood his global reach, his brand. I wanted to work for him. He was successful, self-made, a brilliant marketer. A lot of people. And this is why it's important to note this, because there's so many people that want to turn these victims, they're really victims, I don't care if they were employees, victims of Sean Diddy Combs, turn them into like, why didn't you report this? Why didn't you do this? Because he was made to be this king, this giant, this untouchable person. And God only knows what he would tell people behind the scenes. Combs' security detail often included a second car when the rap mogul was traveling, David James said, as his team was, quote, suspicious of anyone pulling up on him to shoot him. James testified that people often would try to touch Combs or ask for his autograph, which his former boss wouldn't sign. He said staff would sign items and send them out on Combs' behalf. Sidebar, before he was arrested, when he came here to New York City because he was preparing to turn himself in, he was out there in the streets of Harlem amongst the people and meeting up with people, taking pictures and things. Mind you, this is after the Cassie video. People still want to take a picture with Diddy. I don't think gracious is a word I would use to describe him, James said. The security detail would also tell James, you know what rhymes with tired? Fired. Though James said that he admitted to Combs that he was tired once after running a red light, but James did not get fired for it. James disclosed that he was testifying under an agreement with prosecutors, though there's been no evidence so far that he would need legal protection. The defense has been pushing James to disclose any deals he might have made with prosecutors to testify, particularly about the Mel's Diner incident, when Combs and his team allegedly armed themselves to look for rapper Suge Knight. James says that he signed a proffer, a legal agreement that generally protects witnesses from prosecution for what they say on the witness stand. Because again, I think he did this ahead. God forbid he says something that the defense may ask him. But so far, there's no evidence any crime was committed against Knight by Combs' team on the early morning trip to Mel's Diner in Los Angeles that would indicate James needs protection from prosecutors. So whatever happened with that incident, did they meet up with Suge Knight? I mean, Suge Knight is now in jail. He's fine. But you know Suge Knight is finding out about this. So, oh my gosh, like, is this going to lead to more unnecessary violence? Even in jail, and I'm not even just talking about out here in these streets, these jail situations, people know people at the jail that he's staying at. So David James testified to an argument that turned physical between himself and Combs, Combs' chef, after which Combs told James that you can't put your hands on a woman. James told the court that he was in Miami in Combs' kitchen when the chef told him how to do his job. The former assistant admitted to grabbing her wrist and telling her to stay in her lane. Mr. Combs heard about it and called me to his room, James said. I told him what happened and he said, you can't put your hands on a woman. Okay.
It was one of the two occasions when, especially when we see video footage of you doing that. It's one thing if we were speculating about it and we didn't see footage of it, but okay. It was one of the two occasions when Combs warned James that he could be fired, James testified. The other time was when James smoked marijuana. Again, when you are assisting a man that has a bag full of all kinds of things worse than marijuana. So Combs, but mind you, he's reprimanding Daniel James, David James, in regards to getting physical with the chef. But from what I call, Diddy got physical with the chef, allegedly. I'll just say that. Combs didn't always get along with his former personal chef, Jordan Atkinson, James said. After one physical confrontation between... Okay, see, I thought I was going crazy. After one physical confrontation between Combs and Atkinson in Alpine, New Jersey, Combs asked James to report Atkinson to the police, James said. He told me to make a police report that Chef Jordan hit him first. So he was trying to get ahead of it because he was worried, probably. He says that I did not file it because I did not want to make a false report. David James was no fool. That's one thing that I've gotten from his testimony. He was no fool. And he was smart not to do it. He says, I did not file it because I did not want to make a false report. I went out and came back and told him I made the report. He's got a sense of humor, David James. Okay? He's got a sense of humor. So Combs' former personal assistant has finished testifying, and the government has called its next witness, Regina Ventura. So Cassie's mom has been sworn in and prosecutor Emily Johnson will begin the questioning. Prosecutors revisited an email Cassie sent to her mother, Regina Ventura, in December of 2011 that said that Combs threatened to release explicit videos of Cassie after he learned that she was dating Kid Cudi. And there are a few bloggers that claim to have seen images of Cassie with other men, of her not having any clothes on, and a lot of those bloggers claimed that they believed, they didn't say they got it directly from Diddy, but they believed that it was Diddy that was sending it around at the time. Prosecutors revisited that email, as I mentioned before. Ventura, her mom, I was physically sick. I did not understand it. The S tape threw me. He was trying to hurt my daughter. She testified that Combs wanted $20,000 for the video. Mind you, he probably had, at this particular point in 2011, he had multiple videos of Cassie. But maybe he was trying to force Cassie to come back into his life by telling her mom the truth and that the mom wouldn't come up with the $20,000. Mind you, you're going to give this man $20,000 for a video when he probably has multiple videos. She testified that Combs wanted $20,000 for the video, Ventura said. Combs was, quote, angry that he had spent money on Cassie and that she was with another person. We took a home equity loan. That was the only way that we could get the money, she said. And I wonder if Cassie knew any of this. Regina Ventura said that she took photos of her bruised daughter, Cassie, in late 2011 to make a record of the alleged beatings at the hands of Combs, Cassie's boyfriend at the time. And those photos have been shared on social media. I'm not going to share that with you guys, but some of those, there's one photo that a lot of people had at one particular time said that it was Photoshop where you see Cassie with a busted lip. And apparently, no, that was not. That was real. She was bruised and I wanted to make sure we memorialize it, Ventura told jurors about the photos taken in that December. Regina Ventura once called the police on Combs after Cassie told her mother that Combs had taken her phone. Ventura testified that she had a, quote, bitter argument outside her daughter's apartment building as she tried to get Cassie's phone back. Cassie was inside her apartment at the time, she said. I was trying to hit him, but I wasn't successful, Ventura told the court. He probably had security there. Eventually, Ventura said that Combs gave the phone back and took Cassie's car as he left. Defense attorneys chose not to cross-examine Cassie's mother, Regina Ventura, allowing her damaging testimony to stand uncontested. Because for them, okay, we're not going to badger Cassie Ventura's mother. Because, again, their case is not about DV. Clearly, this was DV. Defense lawyer Mark Agnifilis says, I do not have any questions for you. Ventura's testimony about Combs' threatening Cassie over an S-tape and abuse was left
uncontested. The government's next witness is a man named Sheree Hayes. Hayes, who's 51, works as an exotic dancer who goes by the name The Punisher. The male stripper, nicknamed The Punisher, said that he was paid $800 to create a sexy scene for Combs and Ventura, all while keeping eyes off the music mogul. Hayes says that he was called to Trump Tower Hotel Suite in the fall of 2012 and was greeted at the door by Ventura wearing a bathrobe and nothing underneath, and she had a wig. He was handed a sack of money with $800 inside as Ventura told him to create a sexy scene of me and her applying baby oil on each other and create a sexy environment that her husband would come up on. She said that do not acknowledge her husband and try not to look at him and no communication. He then describes that Diddy comes out, but he couldn't see Diddy's face at the time and Diddy had no clothes on at the time. So then they take their lunch break for the day. All right. Regina Ventura and Roderick Ventura, parents of Cassie, outside the courtroom today. The Punisher continues with his testimony and he says that he was hired up to a dozen times. The first encounter with Ventura and Combs led to a healthy tip and more gigs, Hayes said. She said, thank you, that's what we wanted, and I was handed additional money. I counted it at the elevator, and it was $1,200, Hayes said of the first encounter at Trump Tower. I now know he is Mr. Sean Combs. I was contacted a second time to go to the Essex House. In total, Hayes estimated that he performed for the couple from 8 to 12 times. He said that he was called to the first rendezvous by a woman who called herself Janet, but it didn't take long for him to realize who his clients were, one of the biggest names in the music industry and his well-known girlfriend. Further along the line, I saw his face. He would wear a baseball cap and I noticed his face. Ironically, I am a fan and follow him on Instagram, Hayes said of Combs. Hayes said that he got the nickname The Punisher as a teenager because of his prowess on the basketball court. David James, Combs' former personal assistant, testified earlier today that the music mogul once asked him to file a police report alleging Combs' personal chef assaulted him, as we already mentioned. James told the court that he didn't do it because he didn't want to make a false report. The incident occurred in Alpine, New Jersey, according to James, but a date was not given. So records of the 911 calls to Combs' former Alpine residence obtained by NBC News show that the police were called March 22, 2008, over an issue with Combs' personal chef. It's unclear if this was the same incident that James was referring to when he didn't file a report. A man named David James, told police the chef was fired and left upset, but stated that there were no threats made by her, according to the report. Police advised Combs and James that it was a civil matter. Mr. Combs was satisfied and just wanted to make this a matter of record due to his celebrity status, the report said. So I'm wondering, is this David James being caught in a lie because he said he didn't file a report, but the police were called? And now Mr. Combs was satisfied and just wanted to make this a matter of record due to his celebrity status. So let's get back to this in regards to the testimony from Sheree Hayes, the male stripper and apparently S worker that was involved in the Sean Diddy Combs and Cassie Ventura freak-offs. According to our friends over at NBC News, they said in a dozen or so sexual performances, Hayes never had the sense Ventura was uncomfortable with it all, he testified. The S worker agreed with defense attorney Xavier Donaldson leading questions that Ventura wasn't in any, quote, discomfort while performing in front of Combs. He said it seemed like it was consensual, agreeing with Donaldson's description of Combs as a director of the scenes. However, I literally just watching a video from our friends over at Law and Crime here on YouTube where the act of him directing these instances could show a level of control in regards to these freak-offs. So again, for those that feel as if the defense doesn't have anything or the prosecution doesn't have everything, again, it's going to fall on the jury in regards to who do they believe? Who has presented a more convincing case? Because yes, you have this particular S worker saying that she didn't seem uncomfortable in regards to this. And it was, I almost wonder in my head whether or not Sean Diddy Combs intentionally had Cassie set up these freak-offs, had her be specifically the point person to pay for the freak-offs, even though he may have been giving her the money and the direction to do so. I wonder if he did that intentionally, knowing that this would also implicate her. Because a lot of people are saying that she should also be on trial. She should be considered a co-conspirator in regards to the allegations against him. But then we also talk about the cycle of abuse. And from what we see and what we hear, prosecution is going to bring some experts when it comes to these types of mental abuse, physical abuse, and things like that. That will be interesting because that will give not just us, but more specifically the jurors, an idea on how this works and why Cassie would be in love with her abuser, would stay for years in this particular situation, why she would do the things that he would ask her to do, allegedly, we'll say. So they said, according to Sheree Hayes, he says, it seems as if it was consensual, agreeing that Donaldson's description of Combs as a director of the scenes. I also saw, based off of some of the transcript of today's in cross-examination and tests of testimony, that Sheree Hayes wrote a book about ED, I'm thinking erectile dysfunction, and he does talk about Cassie and Diddy in the book, but he says I don't want to misquote him, but basically he exaggerated some of what he wrote in the book. And so we can't really use the book. Is the book just a work of fiction as opposed to any sort of real reliable source of what the dynamics were? So they continue. It says, in a brief redirect, Hayes was asked about Ventura's time during their sex scenes with Combs. Prosecutor Meredith Foster asked about the one time that Ventura appeared to enjoy herself, but also asked Hayes about the other times where she would apparently wince and sigh. Foster asked whether Ventura's focus was on Combs. We also have to remember that Cassie has testified that she was inebriated a lot of the times. She was high off of things like ecstasy, which even if you are being told to do these things or forced to do these things, when you're high on a drug or something, I'm pretty sure now you're just sort of like, you're no longer there until you are. And then you have these moments of winces and sighs. Hayes says that there was a consistent awareness to Combs and his perception and his desires of the moment. So that's important. Hayes then left the witness stand. Okay. So federal agent who raided Combs' Miami home takes the witness stand. Special Agent Gerard Gannon, the government's 10th witness to date, damn, it's been 10 already, has taken the stand. Gannon worked for Homeland Security Investigations and was responsible for the overall planning of the raid on Combs' Miami home on Star Island. They say that prosecutors brought up photos of Combs' Star Island home as Special Agent Gerard Gannon explained how agents executed search warrants on the Miami property. He told the court that the property's extensive size required dozens of people to search the 20,000 square foot home. He noted that the agents cleared the house and were assigned in teams of two to search each room. Photographers were taking photos of items before they were bagged with a description of each item and where it was found. Gannon said that it was his job to compile an itemized list and that he went through every piece of evidence to break it down into categories. My gosh. So, as you know, court ended, or they're trying to end, by 3 p.m. today. So, NBC says that court has adjourned for the day and will reconvene tomorrow morning. Scott Mescudi, a.k.a. Kid Cudi, is expected to take the witness stand this week. As I've told you earlier in this video, what we found is that the prosecution, a lot of the witnesses are under seal, and they're only unsealing these witnesses as they get closer to testify. Kid Cudi is expected to take the witness stand this week. If he does not testify tomorrow, he may take the stand on Thursday. According to NBC, they said some GUN seized from Combs by federal agents in Miami had their serial numbers scratched off, which we reported when we talked about the raids, which is automatically is a federal crime, making it more difficult for authorities to trace a weapon's history, a federal agent said. The government presented pictures of seized goods to Special Agent Gerard Gannon, who led the searches in Miami of Combs' properties. Prosecutors also showed that Gannon's picture of weapons, bullets, and magazines, as well as sex-related items. So we're going to continue, as I've said before, continue to follow this case. And as always, if you haven't already, be sure to let us know your thoughts in the live chat or in the comment section. I want to hear your perspective so far, because now we're 7 trial days in. I think it's still very early to make any sort of this person's winning or this person's not winning. I am really interested in the legal perspectives, because you can ask one attorney or another attorney and they will have a completely different perspective on how this case is going. But again, this is only day 7 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial. We're going to keep you updated and keep you locked. As I said before, don't forget to like this video. Don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel, but also don't forget to subscribe to the Kempire podcast. And when you're there, give us a 5-star rating, because it matters. Yesterday's episode, we gave you additional content. By the time we upload it to the podcast, we might have more. If not, stay tuned for the rest of the week. Guys, as always, I appreciate you all being here. Shout out to our Kingsguard, shout out to our channel members, and of course, shout out to our subscribers. We appreciate them as well. As always, again, don't forget to subscribe and don't forget to like this video, and don't forget to turn on your notifications just in case there's some breaking news. Thank you guys so much for watching and for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network. Don't forget to give the Kempire 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And as always, for more information on everything Kempire Radio Network, head on over to KempireRadio.com.